My mother was very familiar with her neighborhood, but one day she stopped at the stop sign and she wasn't even really sure where she was at.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
The drive to impeach Donald Trump moves ahead with Adam Schiff's Intelligence Committee report and a hearing of the House Judiciary Committee with a goal of drafting articles of impeachment in the next 2 weeks. Plus, Adam Schiff somehow gets a hold of the metadata on the phone calls involving House Republican ranking member Devin Nunes of the Intelligence Committee. What is that all about, and is that kosher? Welcome. I'm Paul Gigot with the Wall Street Journal, here with Kim Strassel. Hey, Kim.
Hello.
And Kyle Peterson. Hi, Kyle.
Hello, hello.
All right. So we want to get to this this odd and troubling Devin Nunes story. But first, let's talk about the substance of the report that Adam Schiff released on Tuesday afternoon about the summary of, it's essentially 300 pages of summary of the case that the Intelligence Committee built against Donald Trump, essentially accuses him of abuse of power and violating his oath of office by inviting foreign interference into an election campaign, and it says endangering American national security and the integrity of our elections. Kyle, did they make the case?
Well, I think they've made the case that they've just made in hours and hours and hours of public hearings, and now this is round three or round four, which is part of the problem of what's going on here, is we're not getting new information. Now, today, the Democrats, Congress, the Judiciary Committee, they have a bunch of law professors testifying that the facts already known constitute impeachable offenses. But I think that's part of, we don't have anything new. I think that's part of why everyone is digging in their heels. I thought it was interesting. So 538 had a poll.
This is the website.
Yes, had a poll where they asked people, you know, did the impeachment hearings, the first round of them, change your mind? And there was a majority of people that they said, you know, it did change their mind in some way. But 95% of the people who said the hearings made them more likely to think this is impeachable already thought it was impeachable. And similarly, 95% of the people who thought no already thought no. So nobody seems to be shifting, which is a problem if you're going to try to make the case that we should, toss the president out of office before the 2020 election.
Kim, I was struck by the fact that at in the summary of the report it was a long summary that Schiff released, and I read every word of it. There was no mention of bribery or extortion that I could find, and frankly, no mention of any specific statutes at all that the president may have violated. There was some suggestion that he had tampered with the witness by criticizing the former Ukrainian ambassador, Ms. Yovanovitch, while she was testifying. But that, of course, is a highly tenuous that fact base will not support an actual witness tampering criminal violation of law or charge. After all the talk about extortion and bribery, isn't it striking it didn't make it?
Yeah, the lack of those words in there really jumped out at me too, Paul, especially because if you sat through all of those hearings, which unfortunately some of us did, they were used ceaselessly by Democrats throughout, the bribery, extortion. I think the problem that Mr. Schiff had in the end is that despite his somewhat heroic attempts during the hearing to expand the definition of bribery in a way that's disconnected from statutes or even the history of the country and the way we thought about that word, he knew that if he were to attempt that in a report that went to the Judiciary Committee, that it would subject Democrats to that kind of legal analysis and people pointing out that they did not hit the standard, certainly under what we have in law or history. And so instead, they had this summary that accuses the president of placing his own personal interests above the national interests of the country, and undermining the integrity of the election process and endangering U.S. national security. Now, those are all nebulous terms. And again, I think it gets to why Kyle said people weren't really convinced, because if you pick apart each of those different claims, you can point to many presidents in history that have engaged in similar behavior. All presidents, to some degree, seek a political advantage when they're pursuing foreign policy. And, you know, past presidents, too, have certainly not taken great care when it comes to election integrity. And it's also hard to make the case that in any way that U.S. national security was undermined from anything that Donald Trump did in that telephone call. So I think that that's why they come out of this looking as weak as they did going into it.
On the point about endangering national security, I mean, I guess the argument would be that by delaying by some weeks the delivery of military aid to Ukraine, that somehow that was undermining the Ukrainian effort to resist the Russians. On the other hand, the aid was delivered. And in the end, and after only a few weeks of uncertainty, and let's assume for a second that it had not been delivered, all that would have done would have restored the situation that existed when Barack Obama was president, because he had opposed delivering lethal aid to the Ukrainians. So if Donald Trump, if that would have endangered national security because Trump withheld aid, then what are you saying about Barack Obama?
Right. And that's an excellent point. And I think that gets to the whole spaghetti on the wall nature of this, because we're still waiting to see how broadly the articles of impeachment are going to be drafted. But the words seem to change everything from abuse of power to obstruction of justice, to bribery, to extortion, to endangering national security. I mean, we'll have to see what eventually comes out of this committee process. But I don't think that regular Americans who are watching this unfold have failed to pick up on the moving target.
Kim, the endangering the integrity of elections really obviously never took place because nothing happened. There was no investigation in Ukraine. But even with Trump requesting of Ukraine, okay, start and announce that there will be an investigation, Trump would not have known at all how that would turn out. So in the end, I mean, how would that have created a problem for the integrity of the 2020 election?
Correct. And even if you read this call record, and again, I'd like to hasten to say I really wish he'd never mentioned Joe Biden's name.
Sure.
But he wasn't pressuring the Ukrainian president to dig up dirt on Biden. I mean, this has been one of the central claims of Democrats. He wasn't saying, I want you to go up and manufacture something on Joe Biden. I want you to hand over something to me that I can use against this guy. He was saying, you know, do an investigation. There's been a lot of things swirling around. And as you said, no one knew what the outcome of that would be. I would also like to point out again, just the double standards here. It is always somewhat remarkable to me to watch Democrats lecture about the integrity of the presidential election process in light of what happened in 2016 and the fact that it was the Democratic Party, the DNC, and the Hillary Clinton campaign who financed a foreign operative who used to work for the British intelligence service to call a bunch of Russians and get a bunch of Russian disinformation and then seed it out across the country in the run-up to the election and hand it to the FBI. That to me would seem to not having a lot of care for the U.S. presidential election process.
We should stipulate that, certainly I would stipulate that the call between President Trump and President Zelensky of Ukraine was not perfect, as the president says. Bringing up the name of Joe Biden and asking for an investigation on that was not appropriate behavior. He should not have done that. It, in fact, has now gotten him into this predicament. And the president's preoccupation with what happened in 2016 involving Ukraine in the election is almost to the point of obsession. And much of what the president says went wrong there has been discredited, although there was some funny business with Ukraine that could be investigated. But the point is, the question does this all rise to the level of an impeachable offense? And that's where the rub is.
Yeah, so there's plenty to criticize here. But on the question of impeachable offense, I mean, I would recommend the prepared testimony by Jonathan Turley, who's a George Washington University law professor called by Republicans. And he goes through it in great detail. He says this would be the first impeachment in history without, of a president in history without a clear criminal act. He says if the House proceeds solely on the Ukraine allegations, this would stand out as the shortest proceeding with the thinnest evidentiary record and the narrowest grounds ever used to impeach a president. And then he talks about sort of the degradation of this threat of impeachment. He quotes people saying, you know, we should impeach the president because he raised money for senators, and that could be construed as felony bribery because they're going to vote on whether to convict him. He says impeachment has become an impulse buy in our raging political environment. Slate has even featured a running impeach-o-meter. There's definitely something to that, and it's a worrying trend in our political culture.
We're talking about the impeachment process for Donald Trump in the House of Representatives, and you're listening to Potomac Watch from the Wall Street Journal.
My mother was very familiar with her neighborhood, but one day she stopped at the stop sign, and she wasn't even really sure where she was at.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. I'm Paul Gigot with Kim Strassel and Kyle Peterson. And I just want to underscore the point that Kyle was making about the lack of a criminal charge in this impeachment report to date, because this really would be the first time that a president would be impeached without an explicit, specific criminal allegation. In the case of Andrew Johnson in 1860s, you had the law passed by the Congress about the tenure of an official, even though it was later ruled unconstitutional by the Supreme Court. Johnson did violate that act. Richard Nixon, by the time he was formally impeached by the Judiciary Committee, evidence of obstruction of justice, and certainly at the end, was pretty clear, was very clear. And he would have been convicted almost certainly by the Senate. In Bill Clinton's case, there's really no dispute that he committed perjury, lied to a grand jury, and that was an explicit, specific criminal offense. Is that impeachable behavior? Democrats at the time said even that violation of law was not impeachable because it was just about to protect public knowledge, the public from finding out about his affair with an intern. So this would be the first time setting a new precedent about what the standards for impeachment are, Kim.
Yeah, and it's notable as we're watching this first hearing on Wednesday from the House Judiciary Committee, where Jerry Nadler, the chairman, went to great effort to find these three law professors who would sit in front of the cameras and explain why, yes, everything Donald Trump did was an impeachable offense. And it's notable because they can't list a crime either. So we're hearing a lot of very academic discussions about the history and the founders and the fact that, you know, behavior like this simply cannot be tolerated. This is exactly what impeachment was designed for. I mean, that's an interpretation, and it doesn't get away from the fact that, as you mentioned, this is unprecedented, the way we are using impeachment at the moment, and something that I don't think that Democrats have fully thought through, or if they have, they don't seem to care, is that when you set new precedents like this, they have a way of boomeranging on you too. And I think it's a very worrisome thing that we're entering into a period in this country where each party is going to go forward with the belief that you can use impeachment to settle political differences. And that is, in essence, what you're seeing happen here.
It doesn't have to. I mean, under the Constitution, the House can really impeach for any reason, because you can define high crimes and misdemeanors pretty much any way you want. But the point we're trying to make, that I'm trying to make, is that this would be the first time that it has done so without an explicit criminal allegation attached.
Correct.
At least based on the current state of play. And that is and that is different. And of course, the reason that in the past people have used criminal behavior is because it actually focuses public attention. It's focuses on specific actions and is why we have them as statutes in law, as opposed to a generalized notion about endangering national security or abuse of power, which are much harder notions to pin down. And are subject to a variety of definitions and interpretations. All right, let's before we go talk about what I think is a highly unusual revelation in the 300-page Schiff report, Kim, and that is that Adam Schiff subpoenaed the phone records of several Americans, including Devin Nunes, who is the ranking Republican on the Intelligence Committee, and documents cases where the metadata. Now, what do we mean by metadata? We mean the phone numbers and the length and durations of the calls, not the contents of the calls. But he reports in the report multiple times that Devin Nunes had called Rudy Giuliani, for the president's personal attorney, that Devin Nunes talked to a reporter who had done some reporting on the Ukraine, that Devin Nunes talked to some of the Ukrainian associates of Rudy Giuliani. And this seems to be an attempt to smear Nunes by innuendo without its relevance to the actual offenses that they're alleging Donald Trump committed, Kim.
Yeah, well, just to be really clear of what we have here, because I want to make sure that there's no confusion. We have a number of phone logs, and they do show calls between these various actors. And among those are Rudy Giuliani, the White House, a White House phone number, Jay Sekulow, who is another Trump attorney, Victoria Tonsing, who's an outside conservative lawyer, Lev Parnas, who is a former Giuliani associate who's since been indicted for other charges, and Mr. Nunes, as you mentioned. Now, it's not clear that they have Nunes's telephone number records.
I see. Okay.
Or whether or not he has been, those were simply caught because they were, what it does seem very clear is that they obtained the phone records of a few individuals such as Rudy Giuliani, Lev Parnas. And potentially even, those seem to be the main ones. And this is remarkable because from what we can see in this document, it looks as though this information was provided by AT&T. It is metadata, as you say, and what really hits me here is that we have all kinds of rules and laws about the use of metadata, and for instance, federal prosecutors and their access to metadata, at what times they can access it, what hoops they have to jump through to get a hold of it, because we have privacy rules in this country, obviously. It looks as though what happened here is that, you know, Adam Schiff simply said to AT&T, hand it over, and the company did, which is highly disturbing that Democrats would use their surveillance, I mean, and their powers in such a way. And then, in addition, use them to basically smear a bunch of people by suggesting they were all in on the president's plot to engage in a high crime and misdemeanor.
Just to remind people, we had a ferocious debate in this country over the federal government, the executive branches, National Security Agency's collection of metadata in the pursuit of terrorists. And in the end, the law was amended so that the NSA cannot no longer have bulk collection of metadata. It has to go to the sources, which includes the telecommunications companies, some of the internet companies, with specific requests, specific numbers, and specific reasons to make the request. So Adam Schiff here, in his role at the Intelligence Committee, I gather, Kim, there were subpoenas issued, But whether or not the checks and balances of the executive branch process, we don't know if that was followed. And it seems to me that this is an extraordinary act. And then let's assume that they were in the pursuit, getting these this data in the pursuit of Rudy Giuliani, the president's attorney, which is a problem in and of itself since Giuliani is the president's attorney. But somehow you collected then the fact that Giuliani and others had had these conversations with the ranking member Devin Nunes of the committee. Well, you would think you wouldn't put that in the report, right? Instead, they throw it in there with Devin Nunes, which is irrelevant to what acts the president committed. These were executive branch offenses that had nothing to do with Devin Nunes as far as anything we know, and yet he's mentioned in there. And at his press conference, Schiff said the following: "It is, I think, deeply concerning that at a time when the president of the United States was using the power of his office to dig up dirt on a political rival, that there may be evidence that there were members of Congress complicit in that activity." End quote. That is a drive-by smear, in my estimation.
No, I think you're actually being charitable in that description. It's really out of bounds. Because first of all, as you said, Devin Nunes, not only is he a ranking member on the Intelligence Committee, so what you have is the senior member of the House Intelligence Committee using surveillance powers to dig up information and smear his own ranking member, but also the deliberate way of Schiff saying all of that and not making the distinction, as you mentioned, between what the president was doing and Mr. Nunes's own right and, if not obligation, to engage in oversight himself. He can, his discussions with Rudy Giuliani, his discussions with the White House, you know, we don't know what they entail, again, because the contents of these calls are not there. But there is no reason to believe that Devin Nunes was engaged in anything scurrilous rather than Devin Nunes engaging in his activities as a congressman. And for Schiff to present all of this as some suggestion, again, that he was complicit in some sort of nefarious behavior, is with no evidence and no proof other than a phone log, is really appalling.
Yeah, I mean, the story of a political story of our time is escalation, constant escalation, and this seems like another instance and a sort of troubling one. If congressmen are doing this to their fellow congressmen across the aisle, I mean, we hear a lot about the comedy of the old days, and maybe part of that is a myth, but it would be at least better not to be throwing each other under the bus like this.
Well, and Devin, one of the revelations about the calls is that Nunes and others were calling John Solomon, who was a reporter for the Washington Examiner, who had done some reporting on Ukraine and the 2016 election. So if you think about that from the point of view of being fellow journalists, that essentially means that Adam Schiff could have subpoenaed any of us who were talking to Devin Nunes about, well, whatever we were talking to him about, or calling Rudy Giuliani because we wanted to get Rudy Giuliani's story about what he said, what he thought about the impeachment probe, or anything, or doing reporting. And it's, I mean, you would think that this would be problematic for the press corps, which doesn't like its phone records to be released, to be accessed by anybody, much less on a secret basis.
Oh, and yet not a word, Paul. And it isn't just that their phone records were accessed. They were then published.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, this is astonishing. The idea, look, this is really scary. The idea that one of the more powerful men in the country who is allowed to operate in secret can go to a phone company, say, hand it over, get the call records of who reporters are calling, and then put that out there for public review. That's, I mean, there are words for that. And, you know, I haven't had a focus group lately on whether or not it's extortion or what. But that's a very chilling thing for the press corps. And normally the press would lose their marbles over something like this. But because John Solomon is a conservative reporter, and because they're so eager to again, throw everyone into this plot, instead they're just running these titillated stories about the phone logs with nary a word of complaint about the process and the methods that were used.
The implication of much of the coverage of this in the last 12 to 18 hours has been that, this is all part of the conspiracy, without any concern that I've seen over the fact that how in the world could these phone records be accessed, and what's the justification for it, much less, as you say, published. Well, we're going to follow this story, not just impeachment, but also this metadata story as the days go by. Thank you all for listening. Thanks to Kyle and Kim. We'll be back later in the week with another edition of Potomac Watch.